ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, the host of Politics Now. And sometimes it can be hard to cut through all the noise from the Canberra bubble. But on the Politics Now podcast, bursting it wide open is our core business. I'm joined by the brightest minds at the ABC to break down the poly speak and have a chat about what's actually going on behind the scenes. It's called Politics Now, and you can find it on ABC Listen. Pauline Hanson has been on a European tour. She's been spruiking her anti-immigration policies, which are already pretty well known to Australian voters. But what about her ideas when it comes to the economy, which have barely raised a mention? Today, business and economics reporter Gareth Hutchins on what Australia's economy could look like under One Nation. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Gareth, Pauline Hanson, she's been on this European jaunt that's been receiving a fair bit of attention. She even sat down with the far-right figure and convicted criminal, Tommy Robinson, on his podcast, where she made some very controversial comments. But that's all pretty true to form, isn't it? These are the sort of things we expect from her.
It is. Yeah, it is what we expect from her. Now, she blamed the end of the White Australia policy as the beginning of Australia's migration problems.
I've seen some crazy videos coming out of Australia. How has that happened when you have such a strong immigration policy?
Well, it started in 1973 with Gough Whitlam. So they opened up and got rid of the White Australia policy. Then they started bringing in the different migrants.
That interview with Tommy Robinson, she claimed that migrants were coming to Australia purely for the welfare system.
And a lot of people come into Australia purely for the welfare system or to get on our NDIS.
She also mentioned a couple of other things which I think she's probably going to be wanting to backtrack on.
There are false allegations that I want to introduce the White Australia policy. Not the case.
Now, anti-immigration policies, that's always been part of Pauline Hanson's platform. But what I want to actually do with you is talk about her ideas for the economy. Now, it is worth noting, Gareth, that Senator Hanson, she was pictured with Gina Reinhart during this European trip at a very expensive Italian hotel. And we know, don't we, that Pauline Hanson does take policy advice from the mining magnate.
Yeah, and she has said that she considers Gina Reinhart a personal friend of hers.
I consider her a friend, and I'm very grateful. Grateful's the word, for her support. She's one of the highest taxpayers in the country, the amount of people that she employs.
And earlier this year, she was gifted a plane by one of Gina Reinhart's companies. So they are quite close.
Well, Gareth, last month, Pauline Hanson, she made her inaugural appearance at the Press Club in Canberra. And since then, her economic credentials have started to receive a bit more scrutiny. So just tell me about her key ideas that she has outlined so far.
Well, so on One Nation's website lists many of its policies. So and a lot of them we already know about. So it wants to see 3 new coal-fired power stations. It wants to ban offshore wind farms. It wants to abolish the Department of Climate Change. So these are the things that we already know. Mm-hmm. But when Angus Taylor, the leader of the Liberal Party, took a real swipe at some of her more expensive policies, this is when the scrutiny seems to have really turned towards One Nation.
Right, because Angus Taylor said at a speech at the Sydney Institute recently, some of these policies, 4 main policies in particular, would lead to an eternity of pain. They're his words.
Their top 4 financial commitments alone could cost the budget in the order of $1 trillion over a decade, averaging about $100 billion a year. And they have made no clear or credible plan for how they'd pay for those commitments.
Yeah, so when he was talking about those four main policies, he was referring to One Nation's plan to increase defence spending to 3.5% of GDP, to introduce income splitting for families, to index income tax brackets to inflation, and to pursue zero net migration. Angus Taylor said that if those things remain unfunded, that could lead to a tripling of the government debt from $1 trillion to $3 trillion, a surge in inflation. The RBA would have to lift interest rates to clamp down on the inflation.
To those who feel like lighting a match, believe me when I say that a moment of satisfaction isn't worth the eternity of pain that will follow. One Nation claims to offer a way out of a national malaise. In reality, they would only make things worse. One Nation is a column of smoke.
And Pauline Hanson, she did hit back against Angus Taylor in an online video, saying really they should be on sort of the same side.
I'm very disappointed with this. You know, Angus, I'm not your enemy. Let's work together. That's right, I keep saying it all the time. The people of Australia are crying out for change.
But let's just unpack this a bit more. These ideas from Pauline Hanson that Angus Taylor, for one, is very opposed to. Now, defence spending, as you mentioned, you know, she wants that to increase from the current 2% to 3.5% of GDP. Now, that would be massively expensive, of course. Mm. But under One Nation, there's also this idea of income splitting. So just explain that for me. It's not a new idea.
No, it's not a new idea. Other countries do it. It's income splitting is a tax arrangement where the income that might otherwise be owned by one person in a household is divided between, say, both parents before their tax is calculated. So if one person is earning $200,000 a year and the other person isn't working, you could split that income between the two parents to say that they're each earning $100,000 a year, and that would reduce the income tax you pay as a household. One Nation wants to allow couples with at least one dependent child to be able to split their income for tax purposes. And it says that would help to encourage parents to look after their own children. It would reduce the cost on government for childcare, and it would encourage homeschooling. But according to some estimates, that would cost about $32 billion over 4 years.
Right. Okay. So what about then this other idea of indexing income tax brackets to inflation? Now, I did think that this was something that Angus Taylor did support.
He actually does. Yeah, he does. He just has a different way of going about it.
Mm-hmm.
So they both want to stop bracket creep. Now, bracket creep pushes workers' nominal incomes up into higher tax brackets automatically without those workers getting real wage increases. Now, One Nation says indexing income tax brackets to inflation would stop the government from silently collecting more and more income tax from workers. Now, Angus Taylor has said that he supports the idea of it, the principle, but he would gradually phase indexation in.
Mm.
Hanson just wants to push for an immediate universal indexation across all tax brackets.
All right, might be quite popular among voters, that idea. What about zero net migration that Pauline Hanson has argued for?
Zero net migration refers to a situation where the number of new arrivals to Australia would equal the number of people who leave the country. You'd have zero migration growth. Now, One Nation has said that they want to have zero net migration for a five-year period because they think that those 5 years would be enough to ease pressure on housing and medical services mm-hmm. and everything else.
And again, it would cost a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah. So new costings from the Independent Parliamentary Budget Office last week, it showed that if we assume net overseas migration of roughly 235,000 people a year for the next decade, then you could improve the budget balance by $80 billion over the decade if you lift the annual migrant intake by 40,000 people more than current assumptions. If you reduce net migration by 40,000 people, it would deteriorate the budget bottom line by $80 billion. So think about the big fiscal cost that would come from enforcing net zero migration for 5 years. It would be a huge impact.
So just tell me, do we have any idea where One Nation might find that money? Has it given any indication?
Yeah, she wants to take a chainsaw to government departments. She wants to abolish the Department of Climate Change and related agencies. They say that that would save $30 billion a year,
mm-hmm.
but they haven't provided any costings to back up that claim. She says she could save $12.5 billion a year by abolishing the National Indigenous Australians Agency. She could save $1 billion a year by withdrawing Australia from the United Nations and the World Health Organization and the Paris Agreement. But One Nation's Treasury spokesman, Barnaby Joyce, he has declined to guarantee that all of One Nation's policies will be independently costed before the 2028 election. Mm. So, I mean, we have to take them at their word at this point.
Well, Gareth, let's now turn to some ideas that have been brought up by Barnaby Joyce. He has given some rather interesting comments in relation to the Independent Reserve Bank and how it operates. What's he been saying?
He told Nine Fairfax Papers that the RBA should be able to provide advice to the federal government about what level of spending it should pursue and which regulations it could cut to lower inflation. And he said the RBA should be able to state clearly to the government, quote, this is the target money the government should be putting into the economy and no more. He said the Reserve Bank should be giving a critique about where the government should be on the release of funds. He said surely there's a role there for the Reserve Bank to say, look, I've got two choices. We can put up interest rates or give a directive to the government, whether it takes it up or not, to reduce regulation and spending.
Wow. So basically what he's saying there is what, that the Reserve Bank should dictate what the government spends. It should put pressure on the government to stop spending.
Yeah, put pressure on the government to stop spending.
And this is really, isn't it, Gareth, the sort of thing that the right of politics has argued for a long time, in a sense that government debt is bad and governments need to really cut back on spending. People like Gina Reinhart, we'll go back to her. She's very big on that, isn't she? She even had a moment recently when she gifted Pauline Hanson an orange model bulldozer. You better just remind me about that.
That's right. So Gina Reinhart stood on a stage at the National Bush Summit in Townsville recently, and she called for Pauline Hanson to join her on the stage. She presented Hanson with that orange bulldozer, and she revved up the crowd by making bulldozer noises.
You might remember Elon Musk was given a big chainsaw. We need an orange bulldozer. Let's hear the noise. Grrr.
It will be worth watching closely for Reinhart's influence on One Nation's policy, because one of Reinhart's biggest policy ideas for years, she has been pushing for this for more than 15 years, is to turn the top half of the Australian continent into a special economic zone. Mm. The idea is that you'd then have tax advantages for business activity and investment in that huge area. You'd have no personal income tax inside that boundary, no payroll tax, no license fees, no stamp duty. You'd have special migration agreements where a condition of the visas would be that a foreign worker would have to live and work within that economic zone. So that has been a dream of Reinhart's for years, and her massive mining and agricultural interests in the northern half of Australia, you'd presume, would be among those to benefit from those tax advantages in that special economic zone. But we don't know if that's a policy that Hanson would adopt at this stage. It's just something that we're very keenly going to be watching.
So, Gareth, there are a number of questions relating to One Nation's economic policies. Now, there is still a long way until the next election. Do you think, though, that the party and Pauline Hanson and Barnaby Joyce will have to have more refined economic policies with costings attached when they head to the election? Do you think voters will expect that?
At this point, it seems like there are a lot of voters out there who are just happy to see Pauline Hanson scaring the bejesus out of the major parties. Uh-huh. It's more of a protest vote at the moment, but the closer we come to the election will be the point to watch, because I think the Australian public would like to know how One Nation intended to pay for its policies in a broad sense. Like if we took Angus Taylor's warning at face value, that One Nation's big financial commitments, if left unfunded, would see that tripling of national debt, surging inflation, higher interest rates. That's not a situation Australians would like, I don't think. Australians are hurting. They want cost of living relief. They want real wage growth. They want affordable housing. They want a healthy and buoyant economy with abundant jobs. One of the reasons why so many people are flirting with One Nation is because they don't feel like the two-party system is providing those things with a Labor-Liberal duopoly. Now, if One Nation demonstrates that they can't provide those things for voters either, then where will that leave the electorate?
Gareth Hutchins is a business and economics reporter based in Canberra. Audio production for this episode was by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is Sydney Peat. I'm Sam Hawley. ABC News Daily will be back again tomorrow. Thanks for listening.